Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm interviewing Dr. Justin Harper, the founder of Jubilee MedSpas. He is amazing, and I've met him through my work with conferences and meetings all across the country. Dr. Harper is an aesthetic physician and healthcare innovator with a background in plastics, dermatology, and medical tech. He founded Jubilee Aesthetics in Ohio back in 2014, and in 5 years become one of the largest independently owned spa chains in aesthetics. And he's doing lots of research all the time. He came up with a brand new EMR system called Aesthetic Record, and I think this conversation is going to be amazing. We're also going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency, one of his new hobbies, and the future of tech. Welcome, Justin.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Try to get into it.
Yes. Well, so tell me a little bit about why you decided to, like, how do you even sleep? How do you have time to run a whole chain of med spas and a whole electronic medical records program?
I have really good teams generally. So I wish I slept more than I do. But over the years, I love it. It's not really as much work as it is fun. So I'm probably just as much nerd as I am in aesthetics. And so I like to kind of bridge both of those worlds. And I think the balance of them keeps me more sane.
You're a little bit of a nerd and a little bit of a techie. What's your Question. Background with technology?
So classic training, almost none, but I started getting interested in technology really in depth during medical school, experimenting with learning and learning styles and using technology to empower that. I started working with early on actually Apple, doing a lot with podcasting and the early days of educational technology. And from there, just kept building and working on things ever since. So for 10, 15 years. Always building some technology projects. And over the years, kind of grown in that workspace.
Are you self-taught more than anything, or did you actually do computer science teaching program?
No, I'm actually self-taught. So all of my tech comes from necessity. So, I've never taken, other than I took a Microsoft Excel and Word course as a requirement in college, but otherwise, no formal training.
I think that's probably the best form of tech is, you know, in making something to solve a problem that you're encountering. So how many years have you been in aesthetics, and when did you decide to build a chain of med spas?
I finished I started Jubilee in about 2015, the end of 2014, beginning of 2015. When I started, my intent was always scale. So I built with the intent to scale and build not just one, but multiple. Although it sounded somewhat crazy when you only have one and not very many patients to talk about or think about, you know, scale. But I think I often find that people don't seem to know what their goals are. They want to grow, but they don't know what they want to grow into. So they want to grow into a successful individual practice or a successful group of practices or even a different goal. So my intent was to grow and to start to scale and essentially grow to the point where, you know, we could do as much as we could.
So what's the end point of that? So grow. So have more injectors join and train, open more locations. Do you envision like branches all across the country? Are you going to stay primarily Ohio based?
I think for me, it's more of a question of challenges. So that I feel like there's a lot in this. What's so exciting for me about aesthetics is that it's relatively new, even though it's not so new now. I still feel like there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of evolution that's both from it's just a purely technique perspective, but on an architectural or infrastructural level, you know, technology, that's where Aesthetic Record came in. I didn't feel like there was a good technological backbone of the industry. When you look at training, one of the biggest challenges still in my mind is the industry, in my opinion, is outgrowing the skill of the injector pool. And so I think that it causes me concern. You know, if I had a friend in a city where I don't know anyone and I was just going to ask me, who do I go to? You know, there's a decent chance that they may not get treated at a level that I would like them to. And so for me, I spent a lot of time on training and education as well. So I don't know that there's a specific numeric amount of revenue or offices or whatever. For me, it's really about solving problems. At the end of the day, I think I'm just a nerd who likes to build things and do things. And, you know, the industry, I think, is a very good one and has a lot of fun problems to solve.
That's pretty exciting when I think about it, that we are really truly in the infancy of aesthetics, like the first 20 years of Botox being around and new fillers, new biostimulators coming out, new lasers every week practically. And yet the tools are good and yet they feel so limited. Like there's so much more we want to do to anti-age a face, and like we don't even really have the technology. It's like surgical fillers and Botox, and then that gray area in between is where we really need some power tools, you know, when they're not quite ready for surgery. But it feels like we're coming to new products, but it's an exciting time to innovate. I really do think, but your point about the industry outpacing the training level is crazy true. Like I get worried about sending people, I mean, people ask on Instagram all the time, who should I see in this city or that city? And you honestly can't answer that because this is not only a skill set, it's also an art. Like that's the hardest part of this profession is creating beauty. And it doesn't just come from placing a drop of filler where the anatomy tells you to place it all the time. You know, how do you teach beauty?
I think it's tough. I think it's, I think of it, the analogy I make is evolution of drawing or painting. You know, so I think there is a paint by numbers. I think there is a draw by numbers. And the more sophisticated the algorithm, the more sophisticated the, you know, those almost like those adult coloring books. Yeah. You know, they're really fun and they make really beautiful pictures. But if you, I think the difficulty is when things deviate, when anatomy is variable or the aesthetic goal is different. So, you know, we all have different facial structure, different facial type, both male, female, every different ethnicity. And I think getting that right for all of the world is, I think it's a really big problem and a fun one. But I think that you have to, my research during medical school was actually in education. And so it was in how do you train expertise? Mm-hmm. And so it is something that I spent a lot of time on. And I think you can train it, but I do think there's a process and I don't think it's a short one. So I think that the amount of work and the amount of effort that it takes to become truly masterful at things, I just think, unfortunately, many people aren't interested to put that amount of time or effort in. You know, I still feel like I've been learning and injecting, well, basically focusing on this industry solely for 5, almost 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like there's so much more that we're able to learn or do or grow. Even, I've had the pleasure and the opportunity of working with really many of the very best people in the whole world. And I think that, as a collective group, we still have opportunity to even go farther. So I'm excited by how much better we can all become. How do you teach beauty? I think is difficult. And I think it starts with very similar to where I started. So I said, it really depends on the goal. And so I like to learn every technique and every different type of beauty so that, you know, for me, I have the flexibility to kind of shift goals and move things around a bit.
Yeah, I think you really truly have to do a lot of training classes, but a lot of hands-on, a lot of apprenticeship, like watching other really good injectors and how they do it is very valuable. But it feels kind of like the same group of people going to the meetings all the time. Like the people that are interested in getting educated are getting their education. It's the ones that are not at the meetings that I worry about because they're out there like shooting people up. They've taken a 2-week training course. They're like, you know, work in the ER, the ICU or wherever on the side. And then they do this on the side. And those are the cowboys that you got to look out for because those are the ones that think they can handle any syringe as a syringe as a syringe and they can place it just as good as anybody. So that scares me on behalf of patients a lot.
Yeah. And it's a shame even, every year we get some new products and it's fun when the new products launch, but then we see, it's painful to see like bad results with good products. I remind patients that, we could probably make a good result with saline. It just wouldn't last very long. And so I think that people underestimate the role of the technique as well.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a challenge. When you decided to come up with aesthetic record, the electronic medical record system I've been using for the last year, like in the middle of COVID, that was extremely helpful to have the ability to go all electronic with forms and things we sent to patients. So I think that was very innovative. What have been your pain points in developing electronic record system for offices? And, you know, it can only evolve so quickly, but I'm sure you think of new ideas every day.
Yeah, no question. And it's been fun and difficult and difficult and fun. I think when we first started, we didn't talk about it a lot for a few years. And the reason being is I've had the opportunity to develop systems in the past. And oftentimes when you get, you know, you get excited about launching something and you realize that, you know, you haven't even run the farthest part of the race. And so you get it out there, and inevitably the second somebody sees anything, and I think it is more of a maturity that you know that people are going to question every single thing you've ever done and everything you ever built. And there's a part of that that maybe when it was some of the first things I built, you would feel bad about that, or you would worry about that more than you do. But I think it's a game of listening and then also keeping the priorities at hand. It's really tempting to, because everybody has so many good ideas, but you can't build them all. And if you build everything all the time, you go in so many directions that there's no consistent forward progress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's every day is a challenge, but every day is another opportunity. And, you know, sometimes the problems that you have are the result of success, I guess. So, you know, when you don't build, you build for scale, but you don't build for massive scale. The more users you have, the more it burdens your system, the more you have to bolster up your system. So it's been, you know, several years, a couple of years publicly, or about a year and a half publicly, but it's been an opportunity, I think, to really provide a great service to the industry. When I first started, you know, being as simple as taking photos was not easy. Not organizing was complicated.
Very hard. So standardized photos is one of the hardest things that we can do. And even just like the storage of these data images, like I have right now I have 60,000 photos in Lightroom that are somewhat organized, but trying to store those and find them, it's been a major headache. So I think all of us in aesthetics have these issues with photo taking, before and after pictures, storage of photos, and then accumulating so many photos and not having a good way to get them out there and post them. It's all a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a lot of really exciting things still coming and always working. And that's the fun part about it too, is that it never ends. As soon as we get to the end of one thing, we've got, you know, 100 more things that are urgent and on our minds.
Are we going to eventually pay with our treatments with cryptocurrency? Is this a thing? Are you piloting it at any of your offices? I know you're a hobbyist and, or more than that, an investor in a lot of different cryptos. Do you envision?
Yeah, so I think that's coming. Yeah, I do. I definitely think it's coming. I think there's enough mainstream adoption. You know, you can look at PayPal, for example, and they work with it and accept it. So I think anytime you see big merchant processors, the ability to implement it in a high quality professional way is definitely there. Whether people are interested in it or have the stomach, I guess, for the volatility and the ups and downs of it all, I think is a different question. But you know, I definitely think it's kind of past the point of, you know, being in the normal, you know, everybody's hearing it, seeing it in one form or another now. And I think that the institutional money is coming. So I think it'll stick around. So I'm excited to do more with it.
Yeah, I think that's the big next phase. I'm learning more and more about crypto. I decided this year I should learn it. Everybody talks about it. And you and I had a fun conversation in Las Vegas. And it blew my mind that you're actually already so deeply interested in it and invested. What's a good starting point for people to start learning about crypto in terms of how it's going to be used in normal life?
Great question. It's a tough question. I think there's kind of really two tracks to getting started. And one is just getting started. And so there are a couple of really simple ways. One is crypto.com, finance.us, finance.com.legal.us, finance.us is. And so there are a number of these what are considered exchanges. So that's not very different than a stock exchange. You can put money in, you deposit money, and you purchase something. Now, to go a bit further, there that I would have people get some kind of wallet, trust, or MetaMask, and then just do something really small. Start to experiment with it a little bit. And I would say that's kind of the one track. I think the best way to get started and learn anything is do it, find out what you don't understand, and then close that gap. Mm-hmm. I think the second part that I think it has long-term value is just starting to read a little bit about what it is, or even just starting to understand. I think blockchain decentralization specifically, or digital stores of value, I think is a very hard concept to wrap your mind around. It's easy enough to say, hey, it's a digital coin or whatever. But I think to truly understand how it works, I think is where you start to go from publicly nerdy to like classically nerdy, and you know, see how really powerful it could be and just really changing a lot of our entire financial system.
I think the idea of starting by getting a wallet is a good one. Like purchase a wallet, make some small inconsequential dollar value amount that you try a test purchase with. What's a good thing to make your first crypto purchase of?
I think there's a lot of nostalgia in technology. I think nerds are very nostalgic. Historically, the very first internet transaction was pizza. There's very famously the very first transaction of Bitcoin was, and I think it was like $100 million or $300 million worth of value now, but they purchased pizza. And so I think if you're going to the nostalgia route, buy a small bit of Bitcoin. And it's the popular one, or you could buy the very trendy Doge or, you know, any of those. But I think I would do it. I would stick to, you know, if you look in terms of the cap, I might stick to one of the top five by market capital, the most top five most common, because even if you experiment a little bit, chances are those will be decent long-term.
Mm, got it. And then talk a little bit about what your favorite cryptos are, or you think that are the most stable and reliable for people who are just starting out.
Well, I'll preface it. I think I'm supposed to say that I'm not a financial advisor. So, you know,
your homework. He's necessary. Not. Don't invest your entire retirement here based on what we're saying.
I think if you look at where smart money's going, Bitcoin is really being consumed and bought up by large money, institutional investors, banks. And I think when this happened, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there was a big run up of all of this sound. It sounded and felt very similar to what it does today. Mm-hmm. Well, but there was still a question for many is it going to stick around? It was still very fringe. It was still kind of individuals participating, but now it's really not so much individuals at the Bitcoin level. It's really, you know, companies and banks. If you read all the articles, you'll see, even though they may publicly say that they're not interested, you'll see almost every large bank both hiring for blockchain developers or doing something to formalize their participation. And so I think Bitcoin is the most likely to stick around. Ethereum is pretty much a close second. Uh-huh. And then there's a handful of what I would consider more likely second tier. And I have a number of them, but I'll mention just a few. Cardano, Matic, or some other in that kind of safer realm. What I look at is the competitors to DOT, Polkadot, competitors to Ethereum.
I haven't even heard of any of those except for the Ethereum, Bitcoin, Dogecoin, and the bigger ones. But it's really like within our lifetimes for sure, we're going to be losing paper money and switching over to crypto. I think it's inevitable, right?
Yeah, I think actually major countries are even already in the process. I think El Salvador might be pretty close. The digital yuan in China has already been going through some proof of concepts, and it's already through like testing. So I think a lot of countries are seeing the value of it.
And will you incorporate this into aesthetic record so you can buy your Botox with your Bitcoin? That's going to be the next step, right?
Yeah. So I think it makes total sense to do. I think the challenge is just the volatility of it still, as it bounces up and down so much. I think it would have to be the right kind of practice. Who knows, you know, you don't want to pay for something one day and have it be worth twice as much or twice as little the next day. But I definitely think that it makes sense to enable, you know, this type of transaction throughout every system.
And looking at aesthetics, going back to aesthetics now, what do you think is coming up next in terms of what we're doing for faces? You and I are seeing people who have been injected now for the last 5 or 10 years who are starting to get a slightly overfilled or very overfilled look sometimes, depending on who they've seen and what aesthetic eye their injector has. How are you treating overfilled faces? Or how do you untreat them and undress them and redo them?
Yeah, I love treating overfilled faces. It's one of my favorite things. So we joke that Hylenex is my favorite filler because I think that Hylenex is, it's hyaluronidase. Basically, it dissolves hyaluronic acid in the hyaluronic acid filler category, which is in all of them. But I think there's a lot of precision that can be had with that. And I think that we can subtract just as well as we can add. And I think that that will be one of the many next stages. Is we'll start to understand what I consider kind of the mistakes of the past. It was unintentional, probably. We did much of it unknowingly, but the result is unnatural. And so as we're better understanding the face and now we know how to fix or what to fix, I think that one of the evolutions is to be able to actually do that, to go in either direction, adding or subtracting very intentionally and successfully.
Do you have any other tools other than Hylenex that you're using to dissolve unwanted old filler? Are you using radio frequency? Do you ever put sodium thiosulfate to remove radiesse that's been anchored in place for a while?
You know, I don't. So radio frequency, yes, I do a lot of correction of. I feel like one of the consequences of overfilling is basically space occupying the lax skin or dealing or almost like revolumizing or inflating the area that probably was never as large as it is now. And radio frequency, I do a lot of radio frequency skin treatments as well.
Mm-hmm. Which device do you like for that?
We use Genius, the Lutronic device. Mm-hmm. And some of the results we get are, I'm actually super impressed consistently. It's one of my favorite things to have patients do. I don't have as much experience with sodium thiosulfate for radiesse. And I feel like I don't see as many of those in the short term or near term. Long term, mm-hmm. I feel like it probably, and you're probably a much better expert at that than I, is more of a biostimulation effect that occurs. And so I wonder how much of it will resolve. But, you know, I think we both see those people who have had those types of products. And now it's really hard to subtract. And so it's a concept I use when I work with transgender or different ethnicities, or even just different facial sizes. One of my favorite analogies is, you know, if you've ever seen the Statue of David, it's and look at it up close, it's out of proportion. It doesn't look normal. Mm-hmm. And so I always say that I get it to the optimal canvas, right? I get it to the optimal starting place I can. And then I accept it for what it is and I work around it. So the whole face is essentially an optical illusion. So can masculinize, feminize, make it bigger, but technically appear smaller. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I use a lot of masking and a lot of balance to help to hide, mask, or disguise things that maybe should have been there.
Is your radio frequency with microneedling or is it just the heat treatment or a little bit of both?
With microneedling almost exclusively.
Yeah. And for people who are listening, that's a really great technique to deliver high doses of energy into the dermis and below the dermis of the skin and to cause some immediate contracture, tightening, more breakdown people theorize that it might break down hyaluronic gel fillers a little bit faster than they would otherwise break down from that heat and inflammation that's created. But it's starting to be a challenging problem, and biostimulators like Sculptra and Radiesse that are placed globally around the face can create this broadness and width and kind of really overly bony contoured look if too much is placed unattractively. So it's so important, I think, to make sure your injector has that aesthetic eye, because truly these are hard to reverse. I don't think we want to use sodium thiosulfate on a chronic case of over-injected radius. We're probably going to wait for that to break down and do the radiofrequency, right? And I don't think I'm going to use collagenase or Quo to break down someone's Sculptra that's overdone on their face, because they'll be like black and blue for a while, and that diffuses so irregularly. So it's really in a hard place where you have to inject small amounts judiciously and realize that they last a lot longer than we think. I mean, I think fillers are all lasting longer than we think. Either they're just building up and years of buildup is being noticed now, or they truly are, never were 1 year products. What do you think, that they only last a year, the gel fillers?
No, I don't. I actually completely agree. I think that one of the biggest, so when I first started, probably similar, is I would follow and I would treat fillers based on the indication on the box.
I think all of us have been hoodwinked about this indication on the box. Like, I want to see the studies where they showed that it broke down at 1 year and was fully gone. Like, me and you need to research that. Because I truly feel like that was just some arbitrary thing.
Well, and I think I kind of believe that we're all a bit delusional, including myself. And so when we look at ourselves over time, I feel like lips is the classic example. We forget that things happened. Or we don't remember the result. And it's the whole reason why I believe pictures are so important. But the more I started to fix, I was out of curiosity almost. It had been 6, 8, 10 years since they had hyaluronic acid fillers in an area, and hyaluronidase still worked very effectively to correct it. Yeah. And so I do believe that there's a differential. I think there are parts of the face where HA filler lasts 4 or 5 years easily. And so I've almost completely stopped.
Like under picking. Eyes. Under eyes last about 3 or 4 or 5 years, 7 years.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that similar to surgeries that only last 5 to 7 years, I think that we're probably aging around in many cases the filler. And so even what we see is a kind of a negative change to the area might even just be that the filler actually is the only part that stayed the same and the rest of us changed. So mm-hmm. I completely agree. I pick based on properties now, mm-hmm. barely, if ever, based on duration.
Because you have to look at the patient. But this idea that people forget what they used to look like, and that whole effect of the brain forgetting its previous image is really adding up, because people come in wanting more lip filler. And then I look at them, I'm like, your lips look great and amazing and they don't need any more filler, but you almost feel bad to take that away from them. Like they really, really want that look. And Instagram as well is changing our standard of what a normal lip should look like. Every single girl on Instagram now has a 2-syringe look. And girls come in that have never had anything. I say, I want that with 1 syringe of filler. And we'll be like, no, girl, that's 3 syringes in there. And that's becoming the standard right now. It used to be that nobody had Botox and you could see a Botox forehead. Now you see someone that's not a Botox forehead and that sticks out. Everybody else is Botox. So it's the same thing that we're kind of losing our judgment in terms of what normal looks like. But I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing. It does look good on camera.
I think it's also fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no question. And it's also about fun. I think, I've had a handful of patients in the last couple of weeks who came in, and now that lip fillers, once we get them to their goal, even lip fillers are lasting longer than they're used to. And so kind of a funny moment where they're like, well, I've always gotten my lips every 6 to 9 months. And they're almost sad. They realize they shouldn't be sad because they still look great and they're still there. Yeah. But they're almost sad because there's that routine part of it that, it's actually something enjoyable. It's fun to do something for yourself and see a result. So I think that I always say the good news is we all have a lot to fix. So there's always something we can be working on or maintaining. But yeah, it's I think that's one of the, getting back to your previous question, understanding kind of the psychology of all of this world, not good or bad, just helping to optimize it for each person to reach their goals. Yeah. I think it is really understudied, understood, if you can even say that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that there's that feeling of confidence and empowerment and sexiness that you get, which just charges you up and just makes you go and get your goals. And like, it's hard to take that away from people. So maybe it boils down to we're doing micro aliquots of little boosters instead of, you know, full syringes or something to that effect. And it's almost like now when I look at my patients, their skin, they have this global skin turgor that just looks different. Like you go to these conferences and meetings and you can just see that everybody has that taut, shiny, plump, you know, the fluid turgor level of their skin is different from a non-injected face. Now I can see it. Okay. I'm sure you can see it too, but you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's an interesting thing. But I saw a 70-year-old lady today, 75 years old, who had a facelift at 20 years prior and around 55. And she had been doing her maintenance, and her 52-year-old daughter looked a lot older than her. When I put them side by side, it was horrifying. One had never done Botox or fillers or surgery. The other was 75 and had done everything and looked younger than her 52-year-old. And but there was this level of like the turgor and water pressure of her face was slightly different and slightly much more than you'd expect in a normal grandma. So it's evolving the look of beauty. It really is changing the evolution or the trend of how we visualize what's beautiful as we age.
Yeah, I would agree. I also think that we're understanding aging more comprehensively. And so I think that there are still a bunch of areas and a bunch of aging that is newer to the industry. Mm-hmm. So for those people who want to do things, I think that unfortunately or fortunately, we all have a lot of work to do as we age because we, you know, a lot changes. I think that the routine areas where we didn't have to do much and that it looks overfilled might've been because those areas weren't aging so much. But I definitely agree with you. I think it's fun to look back with patients 5 years previous, 6 years previous, and they look better and more youthful and more refreshed today than they did 5 years ago. And I remind them that technically they might be older than they were 5 years ago, but they almost uniformly look better.
Yeah.
5 years later, 5 years before.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely evolving.
It's pretty nice what we can do with facial maintenance. Are you doing anything for biohacking? Were you taking supplements that are cool? Are you getting your mitochondria to stay young?
So I always say that I experiment myself personally much more liberally and casually than I would with patients. So yeah, at a personal level, yes, always. I'm always experimenting with that kind of stuff. I think that is one of the areas of aesthetics and evolution of wellness is just overall internal and external kind of optimization. On a patient level, I feel like everything's still kind of in that new, maybe some people have it figured out, some people don't, kind of playing around with that world. But yeah, there are a bunch of fun things to do on the biohacking side of things.
Well, give us some names of what you're taking right now. What's your regimen in the morning and at night?
So I think it's good to play around. Right now I've been studying a lot on mitochondria, bacteria, gut flora, all of our metabolism kind of space. And so flavonoids or polyphenols, commonly quercetin, fisetin. There are some proteases that are useful, like streptokinase or peptokinase. And also fasting. I think fasting is a very valuable. The way I describe it is that we have a lot of gut bacteria. Some are good, some are bad. But if we eat all the time, and since our diets are so rich in so many things, sugar and otherwise, and food is always available to us, they get very lazy. And so sometimes I think experimenting with fasting kind of calls their bluff a bit and helps them to, it's called autophagy, is fun to play around with. taking activated charcoal to avoid the hunger pains, but ultimately kind of extending fast out multiple days. There's some really cool stuff to play around with.
All right. I did not know that activated charcoal takes away your hunger pains. You probably just feel gross after eating activated charcoal.
Capsule. And they have been some weird juices that are a bit chalky to the taste, but
yeah, I've seen
the idea that it absorbs the toxins from dying bacteria or stressed out bacteria in your gut.
And are you fasting from 48 hours, 24 hours?
72.
Oh, really? Seriously? Well, you do look thinner since Vegas.
Yeah.
A little bit. I was fasting the other day. I do intermittent fasting, and some days it goes like from the first cup of black coffee till like the last patient of the day. But sometimes you just hit the wall. I hit the wall really hard. I was just feeling so lightheaded and tired. I don't know what the trick is to get beyond that. Can you do this kind of fasting routine and still be active and doing your normal life, or you have to be kind of sedentary?
No, I just normal week, basically. So it's a little bit modified. I think the keys, for anybody who's interested in doing it, there's a bunch of research out there on how to do it successfully. The keys are electrolytes, maintenance. And then you also do things. So you have up to four cups of high flavonoid containing drinks. So just pure dark coffee or herbal tea. The idea is to support the bacteria.
Got my black coffee right here. Cold brew.
Yeah.
But this has like 200 milligrams of caffeine in it. So it can make you feel a little jittery. So maybe matcha. I don't know. I'm trying different things. Sadly, we're all just going to get old anyway. But in the meantime, we're trying like fasting, black coffee, green tea, polyphenols. So you said streptokinase. So you take a handful of vitamins in the morning. What are those?
So everything from magnesium. So I'll play around with different ones. So magnesium, some multivitamins, but then a lot of these quercetin antioxidant type things as well.
Got it. And B complex.
I feel like I get a lot of B complex as well, and a lot of like energy drinks and things that I consume once in a while.
That's true. Magnesium is excellent as well. I'm a big fan of collagen powder every day. That I think is excellent for joints, maybe chondroitin for joint support as well. And so many things that we should be doing more than just on the outside. For our brains, you showed me this very interesting trick with how you got through med school in half the time as a regular medical student. Do you have that recording still on your phone? Because I thought that would be really fun for the audience to hear how he kind of speeded through med school at 50% faster than the normal medical student.
Yep. And I always preface that with, it didn't mean I studied less, I just spent less time in lecture. But
what's the name of speed learning technique, and how did you even think about it or discover and come upon this? Because I think we can all use this.
Yeah, so it's not, I don't know that it has a name. It's something that I did over time, and I started experimenting, and similar to when I very liberally experiment with myself. So with learning in med school, I did all kinds of experiments with not going to class, but just reading, audio, and otherwise. And then, you know, I started looking into it because I don't feel like good ideas are in isolation. So then I started looking for research into this type of methodology, this type of accelerated audio, whatever. And it's funny now how mainstream it's become, almost in all different spaces. But I think there are some fun little hacks. Some of the early research was by a guy named Orr, O-R-R, even from as early as the 1960s. And what they were doing is they were using two large ribbon recordings, and they had different diameters or different circles. So the way that they would speed up audio is they would spin a larger disc and record on a smaller disc. And so that the pure spinning actually changed the pitch and the tempo. But the exercise is fairly simple. Now you can even do it on YouTube or on Audible or anything where any place where you have any podcast application. And so the process is your mind, I think your mind is much more capable than we think. And it has a lot of innate ability that people underappreciate. So when we speak, we're thinking as we speak. And so somebody presenting content always moves much slower than somebody's ability to hear and comprehend. And so that fundamental mismatch is what makes naturally delivered content inefficient. Mm-hmm. And for many, probably even more so today than ever before, as people's attentions, especially with social media, are bouncing all over the place, you know, our topic switching might even be accelerating, but actually accelerating the rate of consumption actually helps many people focus better and stay on topic more than the alternative. So the experiment, I don't know if we'll come across here. We can sure try.
Hopefully.
And it's really any book.
This is so very cool because he played this for me in Vegas at a hotel. And I was astounded at how my brain adapted to learning with just the change of speed of volume.
Yeah, so we'll just use Harry Potter. That's, I feel like, mainstream enough. Everybody's used to it. So the exercise will be this. So the idea is not to understand. It's just to relax your mind and see if you can understand the words. And I'll hold this up to the microphone. And if it's too loud, let me know. Disconnect my headphones wherever they are.
The man you want is Weasley. None of us spoke for a very long time. You've got to take the rest of your potion, Harry. This is Weasley. If I hadn't nudged the sack of gold on his bed, I'd have been distributed to the corporate property. I could want to see.
All right, so we're going to listen again. And the concept again is not to understand at all, it's just to try to relax our minds.
No, it's hard to understand.
Was it your fault? This is me.
No, is it just me? Because I didn't understand a word of that.
No, you're not supposed to, the idea is your mind is trying to relax to understand faster and faster. And then it will hit an intermediate step.
Mother's face, his father's voice.
All right, just two more.
On the ground, all started spinning in the loud slamming noise. Squeeze the unhappy book.
All right, and then this last one.
She was sniffing her hand. Sorry, she whispered. Your potion, Harry, said Mrs. Weasley, quickly, her eyes on the back of her hand.
Wow.
All right. The last one, how did the last one sound?
Much easier to understand than the first one. Mm-hmm. A little bit clearer. I could distinguish mostly all the words.
Yeah. And so the very, very last one, and it might not be coming through because it may be hard to hear through that, actually sounds like super duper slow for most.
Yeah.
So the second to last one is usually where people, it's actually consistent with the research. Their mind will completely listen at a comfortable rate and not even perceive the acceleration. So it's moving
cool.
it moves it from about 200% where you do it if to kind of let your mind, and you work back from 200, 180, 190, or excuse me, 190, 180, 170, then back to 150. And Most people, depending on the complexity of the subject matter, will rest comfortably at 150. It won't feel fast at all. Mm-hmm. And then if you try to go back to one, it feels like people are in slow motion.
Like in molasses. You might have to send me that link. Maybe you can text me that link because then we can audio dub that in for people to hear better. But that was really interesting. So the perception drift as we So you're playing it just incrementally slower, but the brain is really harvesting the information and slowing it down to very understandable on its own, even.
Yeah, no question. And the interesting thing is that last one where, and I actually tested all medical students in my class at the time, that rate that people like, the 145 to 150, is if you just accelerate med school to that, then you cut it down by 50%. So
that's like playing your audio recording at 1.5x speed, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a couple of little things you can do depending on how nerdy you are. You can actually cut out pauses as well. So there's natural pauses in speech that are normal and mm-hmm. some that are excessive. You know, those of us who, I'm kind of fidgety and I kind of look up a lot when I talk. And some of us pause and think for longer gaps than the average person conversing. And so you can actually cut all of those out and it makes a lecture even more pleasant to listen to. And you cut about 15%, 15, 20% of time just by purely removing the inefficient pauses in something delivered.
So when we're up on stage at the next meeting at Aesthetic Next, we're going to have to talk faster, basically talk faster and don't pause and keep everybody super engaged by being speedy. Well, you came up with Aesthetic Next a few years ago. Is this going to be the third annual or the second annual Aesthetic Next?
It depends on whether you count the virtual or not. So second annual.
That was such a feat and undertaking. And we count the second one for sure.
For sure. That was way harder than I think I love virtual personally, but it's easily 10 times harder to pull it off properly than an in-person meeting.
It really was hard. Tiffany Lopez, who put that together with you, was amazing at coordinating the technical difficulties beautifully from around the planet.
Yeah, it would be impossible without her skill and without the team. But yeah, it'll be the third meeting this September in Dallas. So we're excited for that. Should be a really great time.
Yeah, for those of you injectors who are listening, Aesthetic Next conference coming up in September is going to be amazing. And I'm going to be doing two or three lectures. One of them is about resetting the overfilled face. I'm really excited to talk about that. But I think everything you're doing is very pioneering. I'm so excited to work side by side with you and come up with new ideas for aesthetics and teaching and all the things that we do. Any thoughts on what you're going to evolve your practice into over the next 4 or 5 years here?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I always say I try not to think 4 or 5 years into the future.
Let's think 1 year, 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, so for me, COVID forced a lot of change on all of us. And I think at the same time, it permitted a lot of change. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to kind of reinvent and try to improve ourselves. So for me, I would say the next year, there are a lot of learnings and some, you know, those of us when we go through difficult times or like weird, uncertain times, we all have our coping mechanisms, right? Some of us they educate or they do whatever they do to deal with stress. Mine is to review and reflect and build. So, you know, we were very busy at improving techniques and everything. And so now we get to implement them. And, you know, it's a constant, internally, we're constantly training. Every week I'm training. And I think that to have that, you know, a year to kind of roll out and retrain and optimize everything we've done even to this point, I think is exciting. In the next 4 or 5, who knows? Well, I always say that I'll grow if it means that we're stable and successful and doing good things. I believe that I want to offer great services to people. So who knows long-term, but I'm still having fun and there's lots of challenges and problems still to solve.
Every day is a challenge. Wake up happy to go to work. That's the happy thing. The happy news is we get to go to work again. But thank you so much for spending some time with us. Where can our listeners find you on your various handles?
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I feel like it's a real pleasure. It's fun to see the people who are pushing the industry forward and really addressing some of, I feel like, for me, the overfilled face, all of that. It's fun to, you know, and talk about those types of things. I think the industry has, we have to answer those questions and we have to move forward. The handles are Juvly Aesthetics, so Juvly underscore aesthetics is the practice. And then I'm just Justin Harper on Instagram. So.
And Juvly is how do you spell Juvly?
J-U-V-L-Y.
J-U-V-L-Y. Juvly Aesthetics. And don't forget also to check out Aesthetic Record, which is his EMR, which is amazing. We're really having a great time adapting and using that. And one of the best things is every time there's a feature that we want, we text Justin and Tiffany and they work on it really hard and get it integrated. So I love that it evolves and it's not static. It's constantly thinking about better and pushing the boundaries. And that's why it's fun to know creative people like you. So I can't wait to see you at the next meeting. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. It's Dr. K, and you can find me at Beauty by Dr. K on my Instagram, doing amazing things with people's faces and lecturing at Aesthetic Next in September, all about Control, Alt, Delete, how to reset the overfilled face. I'm really excited to do that one and my technique with liquid rhinoplasty. And you can find our website at beautybydrk.com. That's where we have our amazing skincare. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to listen in every Tuesday and every Friday for a 5-Minute Friday. Stay beautiful.